but the cry.
With the world poised on the brink of war, Vault-Tec is reporting a record number.
But me.
Folks, it seems we've got some breaking news. Stand by.
It's all over. No, I'm dry to forget about how much I care for you.
We seem to have lost contact with our affiliate stations. Stand by. We do have coming in confirmed reports of nuclear detonation.
My God. Our soldiers were right. War never changes.
Welcome back to this 55th episode of Through the Aftermath. I am your host, Sean, and with me, as always, is Jonathan. How you doing, Jonathan? Jonathan? Hey, buddy?
I don't understand.
Are you crying?
No. I mean, no. Well, kind maybe.
Well, wait, is that tears of joy or sadness?
Yes.
All of the above?
Yeah, I'm feeling a little bit Boston. I have this headache in my vault. No, I mean in my head that I can't with the nuke was in the. What day is it?
Sounds like you saw something today that kind of affected you.
Yeah, I had this dream. I had this dream this morning that I watched some trailer and it broke my mind, and I can't really tell if this is real life. And I lost my little totem, my top that I could spin to see if it really fell, and I can't find it. And so I can't tell if I'm stuck in limbo, and I'm pretty sure that I am, because what I saw can't be real.
Yeah. How long have we been waiting for this? 6 years?
It's been five, I think, since New Vegas, is it four or five since New Vegas? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, almost five. Yeah. Oh boy. Yeah, 2010. Wow. Yeah. I mean, Fallout 4. We knew that it was going to be a big thing. You know, we talked about this last episode that there was going to be a big announcement from Bethesda, and they dropped the trailer today.
They did. Well, and we thought we were going to get this about a year ago. I mean, we did have that countdown timer and that whole webpage that looked completely legit. And then it turned out it was all some kid who had said, yeah, I made it so I could show them that it's stupid that they're making us wait. And I replied with, thank you for doing that. You've now wrecked all of my patience completely. And so he really didn't do anything but make me want to hurt him. And
yeah.
Yeah. It was like a backwards WikiLeaks, only in this case, I really was hoping he would die. I mean, it was sad. You know, I admit it. It was a little morbid, but there was a part of me saying that if there's any demonic spirits, that I'd be willing to maybe give my soul to. He would do that. So we never signed anything, though. So, it, whatever happened on its own. I don't know.
So it's all theoretically.
It's theoretical. I never, there was never blood. You know, there was only like one sacrifice doesn't count as a contract. And that person deserved it. And, you know, she was 80 and didn't really have a clue what was going on. So, yeah. Wait, am I still saying this out loud?
Yeah, see, it's still recording.
This isn't real. This is not real. This is, I'm still stuck down at three levels below. So, yeah.
Vault 111. Right?
Vault 111. Yep, 111. Oh, man.
So, what we're going to do, okay, I know that last episode we talked about we're going to have a follow-up to our pre-Fury Road show. We're going to have a review, talk about what we thought about Fury Road, but then Bethesda comes along and drops this trailer for Fallout 4, And, you know, what's crazy though, too, is today is, what is it? The 3rd, I think. Yeah. Today's June 3rd.
June 3rd. Yeah.
And the 13th or something like that. When is it? The 13th or 14th? They're going to do their press conference.
Yeah. Their press conference is coming up in 2 weeks. Yeah, yeah, I think it is the 13th, and they're having their own. And we had suspected that. I think we did make mention that once that Bethesda and ZeniMax said we're going to have our own keynote, we were like, uh-oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And sure enough.
From what I hear, they're supposed to show gameplay footage.
That's correct. And so, we're hoping that – here's the thing, too, and it just dawned on me. I mean, it was funny because I've been hearing all day that people are like, you know it's not going to come out for a while. And I'm like, well, yeah. Bethesda has a track record of talking about it right before it comes out. But then all of a sudden all these pre-orders showed up, and I thought, so either Bethesda has now become narcissistic or we're not too far off. And if their track record's right, we should be getting it in October, November.
Yeah. Yeah. There's even a pre-order for a Fallout Monopoly. Did you see that?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It's about time.
Yeah.
Cause I know
yeah.
that there was that one that girl in Europe had made that was like blowing everybody's minds all over anything from Facebook to Pinterest. And I was like, I want that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so let's, I mean, you know, Fallout 4 is going to be big, a big topic for us in this show. So now we have two big topics.
Yeah.
And, let's go ahead though and do Fury Road first, because I think that's what we promised everyone we would talk about, and it's such a, I don't know, it's such a big movie now, and it actually surprised me. Like I knew it was going to be a good movie. I knew it was going to be, you know, just from the previews, there was that little like the first 5 minutes of the movie was released a couple months ago, and so we knew that it was going to be intense. But I like to see the fact that so many people that I never would have expected are kind of shouting the praises of this movie. You know, it's
yes.
Everyone's loving it. All the reviewers are loving it. Everyone, you know, from like, you know, my grandmother to, you know, no, my grandmother hasn't seen it, but I mean, everyone has seen this and they just love it. And, they say it's a quality action film, and it, you know, it's not, and it's basically what we were saying before, you know, don't expect big story, but expect lots of cars and one big, you know, car chase and all this stuff. I actually was surprised, pleasantly surprised that it was more than that. I don't know. I think that it actually had some good story in there. A lot of people were saying there's no story, but I thought it was pretty good. I don't know. What about you?
The genius of this movie, and I have to hand it to George Miller, because what he did was he showed that you can come back later and continue a storyline and have gotten much better at it, because the directing that he did in it, and it took a little bit for it to start really clicking of what he was doing. And people say, well, there's not a lot of story. I didn't pick up on it. That's because your brain filled it in for you. I mean, the stuff that was going on, it's like you said, you don't expect everybody in the world to appreciate this movie. When I saw that it was in the 90s on Rotten Tomatoes, I'm like, that's impossible, because movies like this are usually taken as, you know, grisly and action-packed, and the world, you know, as collectively, most of the world likes it, but there's groups that it never will, and they don't like that kind of thing. And yet everybody was embracing it. And I'm like, what happened here? Well, what it is he took something that was grisly and did it in a tasteful way, where your brain is actually filling the gaps and he's not showing you the grisly stuff. Like the fact that the wives, they don't even show up till partway through the movie. And the only reason why you've pieced together the story without them actually telling you anything is because he's visually showing you random things that lead up to you understanding what happened, but you bought into it subconsciously to the point where you think, oh, you've been told the story. But it's like, yeah, but nobody said anything. You're actually being shown everything without them, and your brain is filling in the grisly gaps, and you're going, oh my gosh, these girls have been there all on their own, and they're with him, and they're pregnant with his children, but your brain is making it horrifying for you without him actually saying, this is horrifying, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And it was ingenious the way he did it.
Yeah, I'd have to agree, and I think that, you know, like you said, the story, it's there kind of subconsciously. I had to watch it twice. How many times did you watch that movie?
Yeah, twice.
Twice, okay. Yeah, the second time you really get more of it. You know, you get the story, and exactly like you said, you pick up on these things. And maybe I should throw out a warning right now. This is going to be very spoilerific.
Yeah, it's going to have spoilers.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about, you know, the plot and all that stuff. So, I mean, if that's something you don't want to hear, fast forward to the Fallout part. But I figure that most of the people, I don't know, most of the people who are listening probably saw it the week or day it came out. You know, it's something we've been waiting for a long time. So, but I apologize if it's something you haven't seen yet, just fast forward. Yeah. Otherwise we're going to talk about it. okay. We have, let's kind of go over a basic, you know, basically what the movie's about. And we did talk a lot about this. We knew this before the movie even came out. I think there were a few things we got wrong, but, so Max is shown at the beginning, just wild looking with his long hair and his clothes and everything. And he is just saying he's not going to help anyone. There's this big overarching thing about how he's not going to help anyone.
He's gone feral, basically. Long hair, yeah. And he's like eating lizards and.
Yeah. So they're showing that. And, then he gets chased down. I mean, within the first couple minutes, you know, the interceptor flips and rolls and just gets demolished. And then he gets taken by at the Citadel, and the war boys get him. And then, you know, they cut his hair, and the thing I find fascinating is that this is something that I kind of feel like I should have seen it coming. Like it's so ingenious, this whole chrome thing.
Yeah.
Because right now, you know, we have this kind of fascination. I have this fascination, I guess, with things that are rusty. And there are a lot of things that are going on right now with rusty everything, like rat rods, which are, you know, like cars that are from the 30s that people, basically little hot rods, but they're just rusty. They don't repaint them or anything like that. So it's like this trend that's going on right now. In the car culture of rusty metal cars. And I love it. I absolutely love it. I've been waiting for this for, you know, forever. So it only makes sense that, like, in this future after everything is destroyed, people will hold shininess and chrome so precious that it's just one of these things where it's like, you know, they strip all the paint off of Max's car just to get it down to bare metal so it'll be shiny. And everything they talk about is that's shiny, you know, that's chrome. And it's just such a big deal to be shiny and chrome. And I found that so fascinating.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. And the fact that they would spray the paint on their face when they went to go berserk, almost like a kamikaze warrior. And you could tell it was mostly to psych them up. But, you know, you assumed that there was probably something where it was making them high or something, like almost like they just kind of went bonkers.
Yeah.
Which was interesting because you could tell that they were all, you know, most of the war boys, they were all, you know, they were dying of radiation poisoning.
Yeah, they had their little tumors, and the Nux was talking about his two tumors, Larry and Barry. I thought that was funny, on his neck. And there's the other guy, well, all of them have the tumors, but one guy has them really bad on his neck, and you can see. It's kind of that's a theme, you know, with the war boys, is they have this poisoning, and their big thing is to go out in like a blaze of glory for Valhalla, you know?
Yeah.
And they say, witness me. And they just want to make sure that it's like you said, kamikazes, you know, an honorable, meaningful death is what they want to do. And that's fascinating.
Well, and I love that they did it almost kind of like, you can tell that Immortan Joe had taken everything and turned this kind of Viking theology into kind of merged it with the chrome side and then turned them into like basically religious fanatics. I mean, just the fact that he looked at me. I mean, he has religious fanaticism and he knows it. And so, you know, he controls that side of it with religious fanaticism and the other side with the fact that he controls the water.
Yeah.
Which was wild.
Yeah, that's such a precious resource. I like how even he said, don't let the water consume you. Like, don't, you know, because when it leaves, it will make you crazy.
Yeah.
However he said that. I thought that was really cool. So, I mean, so you have Immortan Joe, who's played by the Toe Cutter, as we mentioned last episode. And he has all of his family, I guess, up there. You know, like Rictus, what's his name?
Rictus Erectus.
Erectus, yeah, Rictus Erectus. And he's that really big dude with the machine gun, which I love.
Yeah, did you catch what he was in? As soon as I saw him, I was like, I've seen him before. If you've ever seen Fearless with Jet Li, where he fights in that, you know, in the championship with, it's like based on a true story. There's this one part where he fights the beginning. He fights this strong man from America and basically saves his life. And it dawned on me, I'm like, that's him.
Oh.
And he does a great job in that movie, too.
Huh. Yeah.
Big guy.
So Joe has all of his family there, and it's a big deal because he has the wives, you know, and he's kind of, you know, procreating the species, you know, single-handedly.
Yeah, and he wants his bloodline to continue.
Yeah, he wants his bloodline. He has all these children, and he just has these wives set aside just for that. And then he's up in this high tower, you know, and he controls the water, like we said. He pours the water out on the people of the area and the citadel, and he's just, you know, showing his strength, showing his power, and all that. Well, then we have Charlize Theron, and she's kind of rebelling. You know, her big thing is she wants to go back to the Green Place. You know, she wants to go back to her home place and see, you know, get away from this desert and go back home, and because she was taken from her home. She says when she was young, she was taken from her home. So she wants to go back to her home, and she wants to take these wives with her because she doesn't feel like it's right. You know, they're not property. They're not things, is what they say in the movie. And so she kidnaps them. She kind of stows them away on her rig during a routine transport. And you find out that she does a little detour. She has different plans, and it's to go to the Green Place. So this is where Max comes in. Max is a prisoner of the War Boys, and he kind of gets, they get together, and he's going to save the girls. And, well, he's not really going to save the girls. I think that's kind of, maybe that's sexist of me to say that.
Yeah.
But they're actually saving him. They saved him.
Yeah.
And then he's kind of getting together with them. And I like that dynamic. You know, it's not him saving them. It's kind of them saving each other. Which I
think
he
was
cool.
A blood bag, basically. They were using him for a transfusion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is creepy.
Yeah. That was, I kept thinking like, oh, the needles aren't very sterile. Like they're just, you know.
Yeah.
There's like dust in them and dirt. And, yeah. But anyway, he helps them out. They help each other out. They go through, with this, war rig, which is a big, giant semi, kind of like in Road Warrior. And they go and they find out, again, spoilers, they find out that the Green Place isn't there. And I'm forgetting a lot of these names, so, you know, jump in anytime, but the mothers, what are they called? The ones that are supposed to be in the Green Place, they're, you know,
yeah, they
about?
Have, yeah, they're called, yeah, it's, so, oh, that,
it's
was
something it? Mothers.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's only a couple of them left, and they basically said, oh, the Green Place isn't here anymore. You know, that mud pit that you drove through, that used to be it, but the water got contaminated, the crows came in and ate all the seeds, and they don't, you know, there's nothing growing anymore, so that's all gone. So it's Furiosa's kind of, you know, like, why did I go through all that just for nothing? You know, and they're pretty much going to set off to find another place. You know, they're like, well, let's just go in this direction and find something else. Well, then Max says, wait a minute. The thing that makes the most sense is to go back to the Citadel because it's not guarded right now. All of the War Boys, every war party is out after us. If we go back, we can block it off. We can go back to the Citadel. They have gardens there, hydroponics. They have water. Everything is set up. If we can find a way back in there, we can block the the baddies, and it can be ours. We can start again. So that's kind of what they do. So then the second big car chase is them going back. Like, you know, the first one is them leaving and the second one is them coming back. So I actually like the second one better. I think it's a pretty intense, has a lot of really great explosions and, you know,
yeah.
Car wreck parts and stuff like that. So they're going back and of course they make it and all is great. But this is the first of many, there's going to be three movies, right?
Yeah, he made it sound like there was going to be three, and he'd already have the other two. Either they're already written or he's already got them in mind, but he almost made it sound like the second one was at least written already.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I think the second one, because he said, well, first, we talked about last episode that it was going to be called Mad Max Furiosa.
Yeah.
But actually, he, like, right after we released that episode, he said it's going to be called Wasteland, Mad Max Wasteland.
Ah, okay.
So who knows what that's going to be, you know?
Yeah. Well, he surprised us. I mean, he did some stuff in this that was a nod to the old one, but it was also new enough and interesting enough to be, you know, fun for people who didn't have to know the storyline on it. Yeah. And the way that he did it was, God, there were so many parts in it. I love the nods that he did to the old ones, like the fact that he had the little music box, the little music box chime, whatever you would want to call it. Except that she was turning it the wrong way. I'm like, I think she broke it. But
did it play Happy Birthday?
Yeah, it was played Happy Birthday in Road Warrior.
Yeah, I know. I didn't know if it played that in this one too.
The only thing that would have made, and it's just a little nitpicky thing, the only thing that would have been kind of cool is to have the dog show up somewhere. But that's okay. The only other thing, too, was I was a little surprised was, you know, the second time when they were coming back and they're using his car now to come back at them. And I was, when he's like, that's my car. And I'm thinking, oh, cool, that'd be great. He's going to jump in the car and he's going to use the car. No, the car blows up twice. Yeah. I'm like, oh, wait a minute, what?
Yeah.
But then I was like, oh, well, all right. Maybe he went back and got it. I don't know.
He called a towing service, you know, AAA.
He called the tow cutter.
Oh.
Which, you know, I got to say it. I had to say this as soon as we got out of the movie theater. I was like, so seeing that he died that way, is he the head cutter now? Oh, gosh. No, that's just ridiculous. So, but the stuff that they did so much in this, I loved too the way, like, again, using stuff that's very tastefully done. Mm-hmm. The only time that you ever saw nudity was the time that they were deliberately using themselves as bait, and it was them on purpose doing it.
Yeah.
And it was in a way, I mean, I love that he would respond like, nah, that's bait.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I love that idea that the women were the only ones that had survived, that one of them had actually been the keeper of all the seeds. And she gave it to the Luna Lovegood chick because she was off her rocker in all the right places. But I loved the girls too. The way that they played them out, where each one of them kind of had a different personality and trait, and you know, some were, you know, more apprehensive about leaving, and then there were those that were like, "We're out of here," and then those that were almost like, "I don't want to do this at all," and they were kind of standoffish, but then became better. And then Nux, for that matter. I mean, here he is, starts out being the religious fanatic, but once he made a fool of himself in front of Immortan Joe, then he was like, well, that's it, I'm dead. And so he just kind of, well, all right, I'm helping you.
Yeah.
And then he calmed down.
Yeah, he did. And he kind of had a little, like, a budding love story going on there, which I'm predicting right now that's going to be expanded upon in a future movie.
Yeah, and it was interesting. I mean, the fact that he would be willing to, you know, try to sacrifice himself to help them out. But, you know, the details that they did in this, I mean, there were so many, and they were just tiny details that all played perfect. Like the fact that there was a bullet farm and a gas town, and the fact that both of them would come in, both with their own style. Like you got the one side where you got Baron Harkonnen and the rest of gas town. And then you got the crazy guy with bullet teeth. I loved it. It was so master blaster. I mean, it was like everything was almost outrageous. The fact that the guy had to be carried, and I'm just like, oh, but the other stuff that I love too is the stuff, again, the stuff you don't see, the stuff that's alluded to, like the fact that he's going to go take care of the trucks down the hill, but you don't see it. You see him go down the hill, explosion, comes back covered with blood.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, oh, he's covered with blood. It's not his blood.
Yeah, not his blood.
And I was like, but you have no idea what happened there. And it was brilliant because you get to go, wait, what did he do?
I think also the quirkiness of, you know, like you said, the other leaders of those other towns, it's almost Terry Gilliam-like.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah. It's so, you're like, yeah, I mean, again, I think that's probably going to be expanded upon in the future, you know, in the next two movies or three movies or however many he makes. It's just like we get a little taste of these different tribes. We get taste of this and that. So it's very intriguing.
Well, and I love the idea of who's crazier, me or them. And at the very beginning, I mean, you know, let's be honest, Max was off his rocker at the beginning. Yeah. I mean, he was so crazy that he was, and he knew it too. He'd been, I like that they didn't go into too much detail about what happened with his wife and his kid, but the fact that he did explain it, they're haunting him. And yet somehow they were leading them too. And so you almost believe that there was divine intervention there.
Yeah.
And that was kind of cool. And then the fact that you could tell he was kind of regaining himself. And, you know, I heard a lot of people say like, oh, the ending, the way he just kind of walked away. I'm like, no, that was so Max though. because he had done his part and this was a little outside his comfort zone. Hey, I did my part. Time to move on.
Yeah.
You know, she was now in charge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Brilliant.
I do like that. And you were talking earlier about the nods to the previous movies. I noticed there were quite a bit. I mean, there was the shotgun. Was.
Shotgun with the misfiring shells.
And, even some of the sounds I noticed, like there was, when they were going through the quagmire part, there was a crow sound that was the exact crow sound that was in Mad Max.
Yes.
And then, what else? Well, you mentioned the music box. There was a part where there were a guy, one of the war boys was shooting these like torpedo, like a quadruple torpedo gun. And it made the exact same sound as the torpedo gun from the snake truck.
Yes.
And it was like a weird, like a pew, kind of a, like a laser sound almost.
Yeah.
And I remember when I saw that on the snake truck, I was like, what? That's kind of an odd sound. So then, you know, you hear it again in this one and so you pick up on it right away. And I don't know. I thought that was really cool. But, what else? Oh, there was the eyeballs. Poke out, you know, the toe cutter's eyeballs.
Oh yeah, the shot at the end where you see him go, oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean he saw that when he fell asleep in the cab of the truck, Max did, and he had a flashback. And it just for a very, very split second they showed those eyeballs. And it was like, oh, that was from Mad Max, you know. I don't know. I thought it was really cool. There were so many of those little nods like that.
Well, and the fact that he had the color change, I think we talked about in the last one, that he had made a goal to not have everything be, you know, the color would be there because it was a nod to the idea that they were trying to keep hope. Like you would see them turn and their eyes would glow. Like their eyes would be brilliant. And it was because it was supposed to be like, and they were seeing beauty where there shouldn't be any. And the other thing too is like there'd be other little mini details, like little Easter eggs thrown in, like when they were tattooing him. Somebody had figured out that if you freeze frame it when they're tattooing him, they actually put Road Warrior on his back when they're putting all the medical info.
Oh yeah,
yeah, and which was interesting because it was like you almost allude to the idea that maybe that's where he got the name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like you said, the shotgun misfired twice, just like before. And anybody at the very beginning, the best part though, the very beginning credits, the first thing you hear or see is that, you know, and I think we all just like. Almost choked on our tongues at that part.
Yeah. It was a little disheartening, or maybe just jarring, that it was kind of an alternate Mad Max storyline, which was kind of weird, but I still liked it. It was its own thing. I mean, you know, there's the whole thing about the Interceptor and how it, you know, got destroyed twice in the movie. and then he has it, like, if it's supposed to be between 1 and 2, between Mad Max and Road Warrior, then, you know, how would it get destroyed like that? And then he would have it back again and paint it again and everything in Road Warrior. So, I mean, stuff like that is a little, but it's just explained as a, you know, as an offshoot, I guess. It's not following directly.
It wasn't really relevant and you're almost a little fantastical, but what isn't? Yeah. Oh, yeah. The other thing too was, so when he tells Furiosa to get rid of her weapons and she starts pulling knives and weapons, just like in Thunderdome, when he was told to pull his weapons out and he starts pulling knives out of his back. And then he's like staring at her like, how many weapons do you have?
Yeah.
Just like in Thunderdome.
Yeah.
It was so good. I loved the idea. I mean, I liked even the fact that, I mean, you could, even the stuff that would be considered grisly was just so, like almost like fantasy level.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that the thing that I really appreciated, though, and I had to almost go and read the art book to really appreciate how much he had done, but George Miller had created, you can tell he created a lot of backstory and lore that most of which you didn't even pick up was going to be there or even be heard mentioned. Mm-hmm. And like the fact that the mechanics were called, what they call Black Thumbs or whatever. And they were, because those are the guys who work on the vehicles. And they like, you can tell that you know, as morbid as it was, you know, the people who are down on the ground, you know, the lower people drank the water. The people up above, his elite soldiers, they drank milk, you know. Yeah. And it was one of those where it was like you see all this lore that, again, is being kind of pumped into your brain subconsciously. But you're picking up on it and it's clicking in all the right places to the point where you hate the guy. But you're almost like going, oh, I see what he's doing there. You know what I mean? Yeah. The way he's controlling everything. It's interesting.
Well, I think that there was one part that was really not tasteless, but it was kind of borderline where they where the wife died and they had to take the baby out.
Oh, the baby, yes.
Yeah, and they had to, he's just like, oh, one more month and it would have been fine. It would have been your son. And, that was kind of like, wow. You know, and they're showing the feet and everything and it was just like,
You know, it hit me because I was watching that too, and I'm, you know, I was thinking what you're thinking. You know, I mean, it was one of those where I'm like, oh my gosh. But then it dawned on me, oh my gosh, I get what he's trying to do here. He's basically, he's showing you a couple of things because he wants you to feel that way. Because first of all, he's trying to portray the fact that when it really comes down to it, Emart and Joe didn't care about the wife. He didn't care.
Yeah.
She was a means to an end. Even if she was his favorite, she was a means to an end to continue his bloodline. And the fact that once the baby was not alive, it was move on to something else. And there was no emotion. It was pure just logic, even to the fact that the religious fanaticism almost kicked in. Like, he moved on, and the other guy, you know, the main general guy, he was pretty much the one who was like, I had a brother, you know.
Yeah.
And that meant something to him because he's the religious fanatic. And yet, and Morton Joe, when it came down to it, the guy was insane.
Yeah.
And it really showed it.
Yeah, Rictus was, he was like, I had a baby brother and he was perfect. Like, he was so, I think that kind of showed how important the family was.
Yeah, it was very, very Fight Club. You know, I see after death, his name, he has a name. I mean, it was very, you know, I think that he was trying to portray that you were supposed to be disgusted at the fact that they were so callous about it. And yet you look at it, it's like, well, that's what he was doing. In the end, it wasn't about those girls, was it? It was about the bloodline and screw this. I mean, that was all.
Yeah, definitely. Now, is there anything you didn't like?
You know, I don't think so, because everything I thought I was going to end up kind of nitpicking, really the only thing I didn't like was just the fact that I would love to have seen the car played into it more, but I know why they didn't, because the car wasn't supposed to be the star of the show, and it would have been. And what it was trying to show is, okay, if he got his car, it's like Popeye getting spinach. And let's be honest, he would have been turning into like war machine, and he wasn't the war machine. He was constantly dependent on them, and that was the point.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, I Charlize Theron surprised me to death. I've seen her do some amazing acting. I've seen her do some average acting. And when I heard she was in this, I thought, okay, I don't like seeing common names and things like this, but she surprised the crap out of me.
Yeah.
With how well she seemed to live in that character. And I was like, all right, you made me a believer. I'm really surprised. When she talked about growing up and why she was after Amor and Joe, and I'm like, wow, you almost made me believe that you really had been kidnapped.
Yeah.
It was really interesting.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. I've never seen anything that I didn't like that she's done. She's a really good actress. Even down to being the girlfriend of, what's his name, on Arrested Development.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, and the ones I'm kind of laughing about, the ones that she did, like Reindeer Games, which we just don't speak of. That didn't exist.
Oh, yeah.
That was it. That wasn't Limbo. but yet you see her do other movies. And I've seen her do a few where I was just totally blown away by, like Devil's Advocate. I mean, my jaw hit the floor on that one. But, I mean, she really brought something to this character, and the way that she, when you have a movie where really nobody's talking half the time and you're having to portray stuff with your face, and yet she made you believe that not only, I mean, for a woman who's so sure of herself, you could tell that through her eyes, she was scared to death and wasn't, what the hell am I doing? I mean, right out the gate, her plan went to crap. You know, the plan was to give the gas to that one tribe, and then they're like, yeah, but you said a few people, not three war tribes, forget it. And then they're trying to kill her.
Yeah.
And so her plan was toast. Everything she had planned for went to crap. And if Max hadn't been there to help, you know, you could tell that the two of them suddenly relied on each other. And that's what I took from it, was, you know, she couldn't shoot perfectly without him being the shoulder, and he had to realize, I'm not as good at shooting as she is.
Yeah.
I mean, there was very much this kind of like appreciation on like almost like the warrior level that we need each other to get through this.
Mm,
I love that.
Yeah, I agree. But that her good acting kind of segues into my least favorite part of the movie, which was Tom Hardy's acting.
You know, and now, I knew this was going to come up too, because I have something to add to this, because there was one part, and I'll talk about it after, but I know where you're going with this.
Well, it's not so much as acting. It's, and I'm not, you know, I've always liked Tom Hardy in everything I've seen him in. I just, it really was, again, it was jarring and it bothered me with his mumbling, like his mumbling and his grunting and stuff like that. And at the end of the movie, it got to the point where there was no noise. Like they're driving this war rig, you know, this hobbled together semi, and it's, you know, in the first half of the movie, it's jumping around, it's making all this noise. And then the second half, toward the end there, when he's having his dialogue, his, you know, very few lines of dialogue, but he's having his dialogue, that you don't hear the rig anymore. It's not jumping around anymore. It's just him sitting there talking, mumbling very quietly about this or that. And like, it's like, wait, really? It was just really weird. It like took me out of the moment, when it got to that point.
You know what actually got me over that? Because at the very beginning, like partway through, I started to think, oh no, you know, like, please don't tell me that this is like, and then it hits me. Okay, it's a lot easier to think of it as this is a guy who was so completely feral that he had long hair and was going nuts. He's almost learning to talk again. He hasn't been around people. He's been hearing voices in his head and he doesn't know what's real. And so you almost got the impression that at the beginning, because the way he'd pause, he'd kind of do this thing where he'd be like, maybe we can go find some redemption. Like he was trying to find the words, but by the end of it, his words started to flow a little better, almost like he was kind of like trying to relearn emotion and how to talk and really care. And, you know, he was kind of rolling with it, but he was struggling with it. And that was the only way to keep from going insane. But, I mean, the whole time he was talking though, tell me that it's the curse of having a guy in more than one movie. There would be times when he'd start to with his voice, and I'm just waiting for Bane. The only thing that would have been great is if that he had looked down like crying at his V8 and was like, "I broke you." Yeah, I mean, or like some kind of like line that he would have said to Batman, you know, did you blow up the car of the Flower Riders? You know, I mean, it would have been like, I the whole time I'm just thinking, oh, not Bane, please, not Bane.
See, that's I think they call it the Keanu syndrome.
Oh yeah, yeah, in any movie you see him in at any given moment, including Bram Stoker's Dracula, he may look up and go, "I know kung fu."
Exactly.
Yeah, and I still expect him to do it.
Whoa!
No way.
Yeah, I don't know. It bothered me when I first saw it, and I was just like, "Wait, why? What, you know, why is everything quiet and why is he mumbling? Like, no one would really be able to hear him if this is a real situation and they were driving this rig and he's just going, rrr, rrr, rrr." You know, it's like everybody would be like, "What? What did you say, Max? I didn't
catch that." Yeah, exactly.
But everything was quiet and then he's mumbling and it's just like, what? I don't know. It threw me off there. I think maybe I'm being too nitpicky because the rest of the movie was so amazing, you know, so I had to pick that part. But, it just kind of threw me out of the moment, I guess.
Yeah, it was interesting. Like somebody had actually put down, I just picked this up, that somebody actually had written down what was on his back. And there was surprising, and I'll just read it because this is interesting. I just now picked up on this. It says, day 12,045, which must be for them. It says, I don't know, the HT10 hands. I don't know what that means.
It's his height. He's 10 hands.
Oh, height, 10 hands. Yeah. Okay, dirt. I was sitting there going, if somebody's using lead speak, I'm upset. no busted limbs, piles okay, genitals intact. I guess that's important, you know, in the future. Multiple scars, heals fast, O negative, high octane, universal donor, lone road warrior, run down on the Powder Lakes V8, no guzzling. I like that too. They were calling it guzzling.
Yeah.
No supplies, isolate, psychotic, keep muzzled. Which is interesting because that was the thing. They were keeping him muzzled. Because somebody asked that, why are they keeping him muzzled? And it's like, well, is it because it's a blood bag? No, because he's insane. Mm-hmm. They were keeping him chained like freaking Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he tried to run right in the first 3 seconds of the film. He was already out that door.
Yeah.
But such a good show, though. I mean, it was surprising in every way. I was totally blown away by how much. I knew I'd love it, but I expected to kind of be disappointed. Thanks to George Lucas, we think that every reboot is going to suck.
Well, I mean, yeah, as fanboys, we turn on our skeptical glasses and we sit down, we're like, okay, what's going to be wrong about this movie? You know, we're kind of like the comic book guy on Simpsons, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's natural. And, you know, this is such a passion for us, you know, the Mad Max movies. We grew up with them, and then we sit down and we watch this, and we're like, "Hey, that was pretty good. That's a pretty good movie."
Yeah, we were surprised by that. I mean, anytime you do a reboot, you run an extremely thin line, and I love that Hollywood can't figure this out. We don't want the same movie; we want more, and you know, and they can't figure it out, and that's why when we get reboots of movies, either they suck or we hate them, or you get something ultimately terrifying, like the fact that they're going to redo Big Trouble in Little China with The Rock, and you're looking at them going, okay, that's it. If there's religious, if this world is religious, then the world is about to end then. Yeah. Yeah, because that's it. It's over. Yeah, and this is one remake where I come back and I go, wow, they came back 30 years later and almost made a better movie. And I say almost because, you know, there were things about the originals that can't be beat. But yeah, they sure made everybody who hadn't been on board want to be on board.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. But, I think we can both agree that we really love this movie. And we've both seen it twice. I'll definitely see it more. Probably not at the theater. But yeah, I'll definitely, you know, when it comes out on DVD, I'm sure I'll buy it. But,
oh yeah.
I'll buy the collector's edition. It'll be like in a steering wheel or something. I don't know.
You know what? That would be cool. Like, you know what? I would go for a hood ornament that had that.
Yeah.
Or even something hanging from my car so that if, you know, plus if somebody tried to steal my car, they'd be like, what is that? The guy's like a devil worshiper and they'd run away.
And, you know, I have to say too, I've joined a group of some of my cosplay friends. And at Dragon Con, we're going to do a Fury Road costume group. And I'm not going to say what I'm going to be because it's got to be a surprise. We'll talk about it in a later episode when I actually make the costume.
I can't wait to see it. My brain is already coming up with ideas that you have, like Immortan Sean or, you know. I can already see this. I'm happy.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about being a war boy, but I would have to lose about 20 pounds and work out and stuff. I would rather, I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's funny too. Like, yeah, I got to say this. It's funny to see, Hugh Keyes Byrne be in this and do such a good job and almost outdo his other character. And I say, you know, he didn't have a lot to say, but like he was equally as terrifying. And it was funny that he made this comment that, you know, when I made the first one, most of the people on this show weren't even born yet. Yeah, and I was that's true. How about that? You know, and it's, you know, I would love, you know, I would love to have seen a few more nods to something else. Like I would have loved to have seen maybe the Dark One mentioned. But again, I think that they were trying to keep this kind of in its own classification and in, you know.
You know, I'm glad you said that. I forgot to mention there was a part, I think it was at the beginning when he was doing a flashback of all of the, you know, of his, I guess it was his kid and like all the people that he was supposed to help. And it was literally going through all the people he was supposed to help. And there was an Aboriginal man.
You know, I wondered if I picked up on that too, because now that you mentioned it, I saw that and went, wait, was that? No.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking maybe that was the Dark One, because we talked about that last episode, that the Dark One was actually supposed to be an Aboriginal actor, and then they cut that out of the movie as the original.
Yeah.
So maybe George Miller's like, let's throw that back in. I don't know.
Oh, man, I would love to know more about it. It's funny, if you get the art, there's a coffee table book, The Art of Fury Road. He actually has in it, like, all these sketches and also this dictionary that's, like, all the meaning for all the different types, like, of the hierarchy of the warlords, how they worked, you know, how the fact that there were characters to the side that just look like women standing there who are actually key people in the thing that they were ones that were hoping to be part of his consort next. That you would never have noticed if you hadn't been reading the book. And then they also said DC's working on a comic series that's talking about how Immortan Joe comes to power.
Oh, nice.
Which I'm curious about that.
Yeah, I have to get that. I love that kind of stuff, that background stuff.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's see if we can switch gears now. Ready? Now let's
Kleenex let's on go, standby.
Let's go down off the Fury Road and enter the vault.
Enter the vault again.
Let's talk about this Fallout 4 trailer. Now, again, like we mentioned at the beginning of the show, it's just a trailer. It's a teaser trailer we've seen. We won't know more until the 13th, which is next week. 10 days from now. And that's supposed to show gameplay trailer or gameplay footage, and they're supposed to do a press conference type of a thing, a keynote, and they're supposed to talk more about it. So we don't know Like, we don't know when it's going to launch. We don't know any of that stuff. But let's talk about that trailer. And I'm sure, I have to point out that it's a duh moment that we're going to do another episode once they tell more information about Fallout 4.
Oh, it's June 14th. That's a Sunday. Oh, I just picked up on that. So, okay, so because E3 is the 16th or the 19th, so they're actually doing their conference that Sunday night, which is interesting. Last I heard, too, did you hear who they were getting to host it? My understanding is?
No.
So, okay, do you remember, G4 that they used to have
that?
It's Adam Sessler and Morgan Webb.
Yes. Oh, I love them.
I was like, those guys were awesome. I actually had met Adam Sessler once before. Really great guy. Yeah, and I'm like, too. Oh, that's really cool that they would do that. Did I ever tell you how I met him?
No.
Okay, this is one of the funniest things. I'll have to tell you guys this because this is going like about 10 years back. But I had seen him on TV at the time before. Those of you who've been watching his show, and funny enough, God bless him, I can't even remember what the show was called because that's G4.
X-Play,
thank you. Yeah. It's been a while. In Netflix, we got Netflix just and got rid of cable. That's, So back before Morgan Webb was there, he was hosting it by himself because there was a girl originally before that who didn't stay on for long. So he was, for a couple of years straight, he was doing all by himself. Well, we went down to Vegas for the Consumer Electronics Show, had no idea he was going to be there. What was funny was as soon as I saw him, me and my uncle Ron, who you guys hear on the sketches, he does the voices of the Christmas carols.
Uncle Rand.
Uncle Rand, exactly. He was with me and we walked in and we both saw him and we were like, holy crap, it's Adam Sessler. And I went running up to him and it was so funny because it wasn't until after the fact that I realized by running up to him, I had bypassed a line that went down the hall.
Oh.
And I went around the back of the booth and it was perfect because I had been wearing an Xbox shirt at the time, which I had coincidentally just had because a buddy of mine worked at GameStop. But he saw my shirt and was like, dude, I love your shirt. I'm like, thanks. Cause the Xbox was brand new at the time. And I said, yeah, could I get your autograph real quick? Cause I watched your show. And he said, yeah, no, but what's your name? And I said, Jonathan. He goes, oh, okay. For that, you have the same name as my brother. For that, I'll give you the autograph. And I'm like, that's cool. And that's when he gave me his autograph and I look over and that's when I noticed the angry group of people waiting for his autograph. And then I started laughing and I went, did I just do that? And then to make matters worse, this is where the anger in this group gets worse. So they decide to record part of that show there. And so one of the things they did while they were recording the show was they were going to have this trivia thing going on. And so one of the things that they were talking about was that there was a new Zelda adventure for the GameCube that was coming out. And what was it going to be called? It was the first one to have cell shading. And I stood there watching everyone else and thinking, you've got to be kidding. And there was like all these people who'd flown in from Japan. And I'm thinking, they've got to know the name before me. How can I be the only one? And I raised my hand in the very back and he goes, yes, over there. Oh, it's Jonathan. And everybody's head went, whoa. And I was like, uh-oh. And I just went, the Wind Waker. And he goes, that's correct. Yeah, come on up. And everybody in that crowd's like, the hell? And I was like, well, I took my little gift that he gave me and I got the beep out of there. But after that, my uncle's like, wow, we've been in line for 3 hours and we went right to the front. I'm like, that was insane what we just did.
That is awesome.
It was one of those side stories. But anyways, yeah, so that'll be interesting to see him hosting. It's good to see what he's been doing.
Yeah, because he was the editor-in-chief of G4 for a while. And then G4... I guess it shut down, didn't it?
Yeah, they were the guys who ran it. They were a bunch of younger kids with a lot of money, and they had no real clue what they were doing because they couldn't focus on any kind of structure. And I think they just ran it in the ground.
Yeah, they turned it into Spike TV.
It got really weird.
Yeah, that used to be such a great. I mean, with Twit and the Kevin Rose was up, man.
And Olivia Munn's career started
before she
became full of herself and started to look in the mirror, but somebody out there is like, hey, that wasn't very nice. But, her career really did start that because her and that, what was his name? They were on that show where they would talk about the comics and the movies and, I can't believe I'm forgetting the names of these things. But, anyways, so it'll be a blast from the past there,
Yeah. Yeah, so that will definitely have more information at that keynote. We can talk more about that in another episode. But, so let's kind of go over this trailer here. I explained the Fury Road, so it's your turn to explain this trailer.
Okay, yeah. No, I think the beautiful thing about it was, if you yourself are at work and cannot go frame by frame through the entire trailer, rest assured someone out there on Reddit is going to do that for you.
Sure enough,
you know, but it was funny too, because the night before, I don't know if you picked up on this, but as soon as that countdown showed up, somebody had already gotten into the code and had figured out that there was links to pre-orders, links to a video, and then one of the JavaScripts said institute.js, which made us all go, hello, because everyone knows, just like we had suspected, the Institute, you hear it briefly in Fallout 3 mentioned when that Dr. Zimmerman comes looking for his android, you know, the Blade Runner reference.
Yeah.
He was from the Institute, which is MIT, and that's where all the big technology is supposed to be coming from, well, other than Big Mountain, where the insane technology is coming from. So a while back we had heard a rumor that some of that design documents, or I think what it was the scripts coming from one of the people who were doing voicing had leaked, and it had mentioned Boston. It had mentioned the idea that you were that everything took place in Boston. You were coming out of a vault yourself because your great-great-grandfather had went in there just after World War II. Funny enough, you watch this trailer and I'll be darned if it doesn't look like that, might not have been far off, because, you know, the tagline for Fallout 4 is Welcome Home, and the house they show appears to be flashbacks to what very well could be yours. I don't know if he's the baby or if it's just a reference, but I got to say, the flashback sequences where – and we're pretty sure that we're hearing Ron Perlman doing the voice of the newscaster in the background, but – with those flashback sequences, I mean, I smiled as soon as I saw that, because that's very similar to what I'm doing on my mod. I mean, except in mine, there it's a hollow journal, and that you're basically passing out and seeing a vision. But I love that they're finally giving us what did it look like. You know what I mean? When the bombs went off, what did it look like when the panic was happening? And as they go through this house, and it's funny, most of these trailers have really been very short. This one was 3 minutes long. It really showed a lot.
Yeah, it did. And it was a lot of stuff packed in.
It was so much. And they showed us all the right stuff. It wasn't just arbitrary stuff where they're being dirty at tricks about this and not really giving us much. It was very obvious right from the get-go that it was Boston. And you could tell right from the Capitol Monument to the Paul Revere statue in the dark, which I thought was brilliant. And then even the airships with the Brotherhood of Steel out of like Fallout Tactics flying over. And, it appeared the vault appeared to open from the top, one of the vaults, which was interesting.
Yeah.
That was like, well, what's that? And the doors even look different. And I don't know if that's, you know, just the technology moving forward, but I'll be darned if it was near MIT, what do you bet that it's a different kind of vault?
Yeah. Yeah, that would make sense. And Vault 111, I was watching some speculation video. There's, I forgot the name, I think it's called like Kenny Plays or something like that. It's this YouTube guy. And he took the trailer and he would pause it and just talk about, you know, it was about a 12, 14 minute video, where he would talk in depth about main points that he saw. And I thought it was really interesting because he would go over, his big theory was that little baby shown there was the guy at the end in the vault suit.
That's what I was wondering too. And I don't know how that would link, because I don't know, you know, truth be told, I'm not sure exactly how quick Brotherhood of Steel were out in Boston. I know that they did start up in Los Angeles. Oh my gosh, I sound like a Trekkie. Well, let's face it. We've got to come up with a name for that. Like, what is a Fallout Trekkie? I mean, we've got to have like a wastie. No, that sounds like I'm on drugs. Yeah, I mean, there's got, you know, it was funny too, because like the one thing I love about Boston too. Okay, there's a miss. I hope they do this. I want the accent so bad, because all day today, all day we were walking around going, "Wow, war never changes," you know, and we were like, except it would be like war never. Bleep and changes, you know. Like,
well, one thing, have you ever played Shadowrun Chronicles?
Oh yeah,
that's set in Boston, and the accents drive me crazy because some of them are really fakey.
Yeah,
and they're almost like Maine accents, you know, like Bahaba.
Yeah,
and it's like no, there's a difference, you know. It's I don't know, but I just hope that it seems like that's an accent where you could get hokey really easily.
Yeah, and that's the hope, is that they would at least do that a little bit, but not get too carried away. Because, you know, it's who knows what happened in the aftermath. I mean, if in Threads everybody can forget to talk altogether, then maybe, you know. I would love to have just a little bit, because I had done that where I photoshopped this one picture and gave it to one of my friends, and it had the dog and him, the Vault 111 guy, and on the top it just said, you know, we're going to go to downtown Boston, there'll be wicked pissing. And then the dog was like, bok, bok, you know. And it was, you know, we were just having fun with, you know, wow, never changes, you know, never bleeping changes. But, you know, I love that this, they're doing this here, because the one thing that's great is I love that there seems to be a lot of, imagery that is, what do you call it? Like, it's meaningful. I mean, the fact that it's, you know,
Iconic.
Iconic. Yeah. Like, yeah. Exactly. Like these locations that are so iconic to, you know, American, early American history here. I need to be careful. Colonial history, excuse me. And the fact that it would almost be like this new beginning for everybody who was there. And whoever thought of having Fenway Park be a base?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I mean, it was like you see these places and you're like, I love it. I can't wait.
Yeah, and it seemed like it wasn't just a base. It was almost like a cult. Like everyone
a citadel.
Everyone had baseball bats, and they were like, everything was baseball this. Like, there were the signs up that said baseball. There was this, like I was talking about that guy, that YouTube guy who dissected the video. He was showing all the different baseball bats in Fenway. So you have, like, there's a sign with a bat, and there was a guy carrying a bat, and there was a statue up front with a bat. I mean, so it was like this huge, like, baseball culture kind of thing, which I guess is Boston anyway. I mean, you know, they love the Red Sox. So, I mean, it's kind of this thing where...
Very Fallout.
Yeah, it's they're playing into that. And I really like that. I think that's a good idea.
Well, and wasn't that the ship, wasn't that the Constellation that they had almost looked like they had taken it and made a base out of it?
Oh, the Constitution.
Excuse me. Yeah. Not the Constellation. I think I just went Star Trek on us after seeing Trekkie. But, yeah, sorry. Yeah, and it's funny enough. I don't know, like, as big of a history buff as I am, a lot of that time period, you know, a lot of that, you know, New England stuff, I was late to the game on some of that. DC was no problem, you know, Civil War I loved, but yeah, a lot of this, I'm like, well, I guess I have some research to do.
Yeah.
You know, I've never been there. I lived in Detroit and, you know, that was as far east as I got, except for New York.
So you learned all about, like, the history of GM and Ford and stuff like that.
Yeah, we were growing up being taught that this is the cave you're going to live in for the rest of your life, and it was October sky for me. And I said, no way, and I took my wagons west, and then we almost ate each other. And it was, you know. But, yeah, the one good – well, I live near Vegas, so I guess it's not all bad. But if this is Stephen King's it, then I guess I joined the wrong side. But it's the fact that to have this in Boston, I mean – the fact that you can tell that they're not even alluding to the good stuff yet, because, I mean, you know, if the Institute is involved, that's probably what, I don't know if the main antagonist is going to be there or what, but I know that the Institute was working on some pretty scary stuff, supposedly. Right. And I'm guessing, I don't know if AI will be involved or what. I loved though the redo of a lot of the iconic things we've seen, like you know, Mr. Handy, and the fact that it looked like right out of the original Fallout 3 commercial, and the fact that the Death Claw got the upgrade and the Feral Ghouls kicking over the carts. I'm just like, oh, I love it. They actually look like zombies now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, well, they're supposed to be a new engine that they're using. And during that scene when the Feral Ghouls are kicking the carts around, that's supposed to be part of that new engine where there's better physics, better, you know, all that kind of stuff. So that was a kind of a demonstration of that, I think.
Yeah, and I'm assuming that they're going to keep, you know, like a lot of the stuff that was iconic. I mean, the radio stations were always part of it. That was always half the fun. You know, and it's funny because I still get people ask me that, like, are you going to port it over to the new one? And I'm like, no, it wouldn't work. It would be, the storyline wise, it won't work. But, you know, the radio station, you never know. But, you know, 3 years, it's almost been 3 years.
You know, speaking of that, I don't know if you caught this, there's a poster that flashes in the trailer, and it says GNN on it.
Yeah, so, I wondered about that.
Yeah, so I don't know if that means Galaxy News Network is coming
back.
It would
make sense. I mean, I wonder. You know, it's funny. I was almost bummed out because there was one section that, and I was bummed to see that it was downtown Boston, because for a split second I almost thought I was seeing DC for a minute. I'm like, wouldn't that be interesting if they did like that whole Northeast Corridor area, or more than one location? But the fact that, I mean, it makes sense that they wouldn't, but I like that you have their areas that look like they're more rural, you know, different. And then you have your downtown and, I mean, geez, Boston, you could do some pretty crazy stuff with that. I mean, even running with the stuff that may have been there since, you know, it was first, you know, the colonials were there, the whole national treasure, things are hidden underneath stuff. I mean, they could really run with this.
And, you know, they showed mountains and yeah. I saw that, and I know that they're, you know, the Appalachians kind of stretch up Vermont and New Hampshire and all that, but I didn't know that there were mountains that close to Boston.
I didn't either. And I almost, it was funny because my, you know, my buddy Rob, you know, TM, actually funny enough, he's in the toy store in my mod, my buddy Rob, as a joke. Yeah. So when I saw that, I'm like, do those look like the Appalachians to you up near, you know, New England? And that actually was making us wonder if maybe there was more than one location. And yeah. then I said, well, I guess there's always the, you know, maybe the earthquakes or something changed something, but yet it doesn't really look like, you know, something that drastic probably would have done a lot more than that. But I'm curious to see what that if there's more than one thing going on here. Right?
Yeah, I mean, the Appalachians are basically big hills. You know, they're rounded, they're older, they're very just, you know, rounded hills with trees on top. So, I mean, these looked very much like rocky and more like you would expect to see, you know, out in your
neck of the
woods.
California.
Yeah.
It looked exactly like California.
So, and I know that there are more rocky, like down where I'm at, I'm right in the border of Alabama and Georgia, and there are very rocky
parts of
the mountains.
Yeah, because you guys have the Blue Ridge Mountains down there, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. And we're on a mountain called Sand Mountain. So yeah. It's a lot more like sandstone and stuff like that. So, I mean, maybe that means that the game is going to stretch a little further south.
Yeah, I am curious to what they're going to do with that. And it's, you never know. Like you know that these guys are meticulous enough to, that they showed us exactly what they wanted us to see. And yeah. They know we're going to pick it apart. And even the details that you could tell they threw in there. Like I love the, cause okay. One of the things I was worried about with my mod was that somebody was going to go, what the heck with the detail? You know, cause I had added detail in it that was almost like, wait, you went out of your way to add board games to the stores? And it's like, well, yeah, but that's half the fun. I mean, it's the detail. And then, so when I saw the detail in this and noticed the board game on the table that said Blessed Radius, I'm like, okay, thank you. Now I'm not the only one who's done, cause yeah, a half of the food on the shelves and the stores and everything was like, is a joke in some form, but it's half the fun, you know, but,
oh yeah,
I loved, I mean, they do allude to the idea that, I mean, obviously that must have been your home. Why there was Brotherhood of Steel armor in there, almost maybe that was an allusion to the idea that, that maybe your family had been military before the war. Before the end, I should say, and that maybe had been in the garage the whole time, and that you went back to your home or whatever. But all those other things like Nuka-Cola stuff, and you know, all the guns on the back wall that look all the right places.
Actually, that I wanted to talk about that because there's that scene with the power armor hanging there.
Yeah,
it's hanging on the hooks, and then
you have the laser rifles and stuff.
Yeah, you have the laser rifle in the back, but there are also components. And it makes me wonder, actually the power armor itself was kind of partially disassembled.
Yeah, it's like half built.
Yeah, so I wonder if we're going to get more into customization and crafting more than just the crafting that's already there. You know?
It was lacking.
Yeah, it was kind of like grab these three things and throw them together. But maybe there will be more of like an MMO crafting, like a Guild Wars 2 or something, you know, like a little bit more involved. I think that would be really cool.
Yeah, maybe even something, you know, like, and I use this as an example, like Fallen Earth, you know, and I mean, yeah, the gathering is kind of crazy, but I love that you really have to kind of put work into stuff to get bigger things rather than push a button and you built a bigger thing. I mean, I don't know why, but if you have to do it 1,000 times, obviously that gets annoying, but I do like where it kind of does make you work a little harder than just go grab this, click this, you're done, you know, and you want to feel like you're really scavenging. And But I mean, the sense of detail, though, I mean, even that garage where you're seeing the rivets out the side and you're noticing the 50s architecture with all the stuff that was like futuristic in it, you know, and all the curves in the metal. And I'm just like, oh, thank you. Now we're going to get the stuff that we've been waiting for forever.
Yeah. But I think that the main thing that they wanted to portray in this is that I'm guessing that you'll be able to go back before the bombs fell, you know, and maybe back and forth, like you said. I think that's going to be a major component of the game.
Or if anything, maybe that you're getting the flashbacks as part of your story of who you are or whatever.
Yeah.
Which would make sense. That's the thing. I hope that they get a lot more into. Like, one of the things Fallout has never really done a ton is focus too much on what did happen. And the one thing that took me off guard, and I've tried to portray this in my mod, so I'm thrilled that they're doing it too. one of the things that they never really portray is that fear that they must have had to realize this is really happening. I mean, we've got this Cold War that ramped up for 100 years almost in their time, and then all of a sudden everything went to crap all at once, and it must have been terrifying for them to go, wait, we've been doing these drills preparing and we weren't ready. And that's actually the core of what happens in the mod. But I love that they seem to be focusing on, like, right down to the voice of the newscaster, whose voice is breaking up because he himself just realized they lost their affiliates, and that there are nuclear detonations, and that he's realizing, oh my God, this could be it.
Yeah.
And I love that they seem to be kind of, yeah, like, now we have the technology to really portray this. Let's give them more of that. What did happen and how would it have played out? And, here's to hoping.
Now, I guess in this age of prequels, you know, we have Star Wars and Mad Max and The Hobbit and all. Sorry, maybe I'm getting confused, but is Fallout 4 supposed to be sequentially after New Vegas?
They never said.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, they've never said. In fact, my understanding, according to that design document that leaked, was that your great great grandfather was the one who went into the vault, and he did it early, or he went into something. He went in the vault early because they were sure something was going to happen just after World War II, and that they had made some comment that they were surprised it took as long as it did. But the idea is you were part of that, and you came out, and you're kind of regaining. I don't know how you would know that was your house, or if you were maybe going to your grandfather's house and trying to regain your lineage, which would be interesting too. But I would I love the idea that it wasn't too far after. I mean, it would have to be. I don't know how long the vaults stayed shut in some places, but I like the idea that maybe you were the baby in that bed, and that is your house, because it sure seemed like. I mean, what was weird though is it's like your dog seemed to know where he was going, but you were still down the street. I don't know. And even my son was picking it apart, like, oh, look, the dog dish moved. I'm like, I don't think that had anything to do with anything. The Institute did not move his dog dish, dude. Okay. All right.
You know, or did they?
Or did they? Yeah, maybe it was like they strange things are afoot at the Circle K.
Back to Keanu.
Oh, yeah. No, I loved it. And then Scully Square, which they appear to have turned into the seedy underbelly of Boston. And just the ambience, even the lightning that was playing off that airship, and the beams of light shining down like something out of Blade Runner. I'm like, oh, I think that this is going to get the ambience award. I think we were going to finally see all the things we had hoped for.
I really do hope it's kind of a prequel. I mean, if you look at the timeline, I you know, Fallout 2 was so much further ahead than Fallout 1 and then Fallout 3, but it would be kind of cool to be back at that, right at that moment.
You are right. And that's actually, you know what's funny? What you're talking about is exactly what spurred that whole sequence in my mod, because one of the things I felt like, the further you get away from when it happened, the more of a disconnect from what did happen that you have. You're essentially dealing with what you have at that time, but it could have changed completely. But when you're dealing with the what if when it did happen and the what are we going to do after it took place, what about that fear and horror? What about the first time that the vault did open up for the first time? What were they dealing with trying to rebuild there? And that's one of the cool things in this mod. And I wish I almost could have made a mod of it all by itself, but you're basically following this girl as she's part of that group trying to escape the city, trying not to die. And what are we going to go? And what are we going to do? Where's my parents? And, I hope that we see that, because that scene though, when they were even that little kid who apparently had no parents, like, was running up the hill, and then the army and the Brotherhood of Steel was directing them in, which I thought in and of itself was interesting. Like, wait a minute, why are Brotherhood of Steel directing them into a vault?
Yeah.
Not Brotherhood of Steel, excuse me. They would have been military at the time, the army. But why would army be guarding the vaults like that unless somehow it was some higher up vault? I'm assuming that it wouldn't necessarily have been them. They would have been probably deployed elsewhere, but that one must have been a big one.
Now, the only thing that makes me think that this isn't just a couple years after the bombs hit, is that you see, you know, the feral ghouls, you see a death claw, you see mutated
and it
stuff.
It couldn't be that close after. It would be. Yeah. I hope they do that. Those scenes in the trailer weren't just for the sake of ambience. I hope that there is some kind of Maybe you like the mod. I mean, for all we know, maybe you do read a book and it takes you back to this flashback sequence, which I think would be perfect because, I mean, I love that the other thing too. One of my buddies at work noticed this. He was saying, did you notice that the thing isn't tinted? And I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, think about it. Fallout 3 is tinted green. New Vegas is tinted orange. The color was completely vibrant. And I'm like, you're right. I was like, that's true. Cause if you look at the screenshots, they aren't really, I mean, they're a little bit kind of tinted, a little bit white, but there's really not a lot of tint at all. I mean, it really is just kind of its natural color. And I was like, oh. But that's funny because the flashback sequences, everything was deliberately Technicolor looking.
Yeah.
Because it was, you know, supposed to be like the 50s, you know, so it was, you know, it was almost like Star Trek where, you know, you're going back in time and your eyes hurt because you can't, their clothes are bright, you know. And, But I can't wait. Oh.
Yeah. You know, I kept watching these things, picking apart the video, and I just kept looking at it and watching and thinking, like, it's so funny when we get to this point how we get so, you know, nitpicky on all the little stuff and we try to figure everything out. And, like, in 10 days, they're going to tell us a lot more. So I know that, you know, it's hard to ask for patience, you know, of myself when it comes to this because I'm like, what does this mean? What does this mean? But, you know, hopefully we find out a lot more on the 14th or 13th, whatever it is. And we find out, you know, what exactly is going to happen. Launch date, you know, we already know it takes place in Boston. Maybe it'll take place, maybe there'll be DLC that go further south, you know, who knows. But it's like you said, Bethesda knows what they're doing. You know, they released this teaser with tiny little details that if you go frame by frame, you're going to find these and it's going to drive you nuts.
They knew it was. And can I just say for the record, screw them for sending this out. As soon as I saw the countdown timer and I went, you stinkers. You know exactly what you're doing. You're all aboard the hype train is what we're about to do. And they knew that we were going to make ourselves crazy and that the hype was going to skyrocket. And it was so funny because this sounds dumb. I almost would have rather have like been stupid about it and like found it all at the same time, or at least give me a release date for crying out loud. But to have this here and then make it's like, well, that's great. It was like I'm gonna marry some supermodel, and she flashed me, but she said, "Sorry, you're gonna have to wait till 2 weeks from now." And I'm like, "Well, what did you do that for then?" And it's like, "That's not even okay. What? I'm telling your parents that you did that, and they're not gonna help me because they're her parents." And I don't know where this relates. That would be weird. And so, Todd Howard, thanks a lot for you're the parents, I guess. Thanks a lot, bro. I don't know. I don't know where that transitioned into that. But I will say, and I, you know, if Facebook is any indicator, I think all of our minds collectively broke. And I have never seen blog entries and news clips where everybody had used the word broken, crying, tears or childhood all at once. And I think they were all like not necessarily in that order.
Yeah.
I think we were all crying children at that moment. And then, you know, and then my uncle ran who at the end was like, wait, you can have a dog. And I'm like, dude, did you even play the third one? Come on, man. And I don't know. Maybe it's multiplayer and you can be the dog. I don't know. But, it's going to be glorious. It really is.
Yeah. And you know, this is such, I hate to say it, but we're at the beginning of this trend again of a post-apocalyptic. I mean, we've been hit or miss with this, but I think it's not as big. Well, I think it was bigger in like the 80s, and I think we're getting back to that. You know, we have the Mad Max just blew up and everybody went crazy over it. Now we have Fallout 4, which is going to get gamers going crazy over it. And then, you know, there's just more movies and more. I mean, this is great for the podcast. Right? All this media, this post-apocalyptic media that's coming out.
It's Ready Player One. It's all happening for real. I mean, right down to this is Halliday's contest. And in fact, it was funny. I don't know. I never checked on this, but somebody had picked up on something that in Fallout New Vegas on one, and this, if this is true, holy crap. But it's got to be coincidence. But somebody had pointed out that if you look in the train station board in New Vegas, that it actually has the clock for Boston, which is true, but that it says something about being 2015. And the comment had gotten made, if they knew that far back, that is scary.
Oh yeah.
And I love that because again, I think we just opened up, you know, the first gate in Halliday's contest, and now here comes more, and we're all losing our minds and going back to the '80s, and it's great. It definitely, you know, it beats the crap out of ridiculous MMO releases that are not doing what they said they would. So,
ooh,
yeah.
Deep scars.
Yeah. We have a lot of hurt there. There's a lot of games that we have some anger problems, but, you know, no, it's wonderful. And I'm glad that, one thing I love about Bethesda is they stick to their guns every time that they do this, and they do what they do best. They're not worried about, you know, let's do multiplayer, let's do this, blah, blah, blah. And, although I have to give the line of the year, definitely goes to Rob, who made the joke Bethesda comment. So do you think the first DLC will be dog armor? And that brought laughter pretty much on everybody. Like, and it'll be $10, you know, like in Oblivion, you know. But yeah, it's so after that we were, you know, I can't wait to see what they do. But yeah.
Yeah, and we'll just have to wait. But I think what we can do is I don't know if we'll be able to record another episode next week, but
maybe right after E3.
Yeah, I mean that's what I mean. Like after that, it's, yeah, 2 weeks away. That shouldn't be too bad.
Well, maybe right after the conference. It's not like we really care about anything else at E3 except for Battlefront. Yeah, like Star Wars. Yeah, this is going to be a good E3. My gosh, there's so much. Even I think you and I had talked about that game, The Division, that Tom Clancy, Division.
Yeah.
That's finally going to come out. It looks wonderful. Yeah, and so I love that post-apocalyptic stuff seems to have, like, you know, found its sweet spot again. And
yeah.
Hopefully, you know, it continues to do what it should do and doesn't become, you know, the world's first, you know, daikatana of post-apocalyptic gaming. Anyways, yeah. But, yeah.
Yeah, it's, I think one good indicator of this is that Wasteland Weekend, which I know I've talked about several times on the show. I bought tickets for that. I'm going to be going in September. And I think when it started, it only had like a dozen people. This is, you know, 6 years ago, whatever it was. And every year it's like quadrupled in attendance. And this year, I think last year they had like 6,000 people, something like that. And this year they're supposed to double that. I mean, that's just incredible. And this is not just people who want to, you know, sit down and play a game or watch a movie. These are people who want to dress up and be in a post-apocalyptic world. Like, this is hardcore, you know, hardcore people. And like me, I mean, I'm crazy. I don't know if I'm going to drive there. Driving from Alabama to LA would be insane. I mean, it would be like 3 days. You know, I'll probably just fly out there. But I mean, it's a long trip. There are people that go from all over the world, you know, to go here. And it's just another indicator of how serious this is. You know, I know I've talked many times about this kind of interest I want to do in making props, like post-apocalyptic props.
Yeah.
And I want to do something like that. And it's something that it's always in the back of my mind that one day I'd like to do something like that. And I've messed around with it here and there, but I'm not really, you know, trying to sell anything. But in that time when I've been having this idea to do this, there are like real companies popping up everywhere of these people who make props like this. And I think I might have missed the boat, but at least I've missed the boat of being, you know, one of the first. So there are so many of them coming out now. And I follow these people on Facebook, and they make they'll do you know, like these like rusty props and like, you know, weapons and armor and stuff like that. And just, and it used to always bother me. And this is one of the things that, you know, I would go to Dragon Con maybe 6-7 years ago, and people, and there was a post-apocalyptic, I'm making air quotes here, there was a post-apocalyptic group, and they would wear, you know, they'd put on some nice shiny shoulder pads, and then they would put shiny spikes in the shoulder pad. They wouldn't weather it at all. They wouldn't do anything like that. And
they were a bad 80s movie.
Yeah, and it was just like, I'm post-apocalyptic. And I would always be like, no, it has to be weathered.
Yeah,
it's
got to be beat to crap. You got to look like you're nuts. You can't look like you're in Kung Fury. You can't. You have
exactly
to be, it's too perfect and it's ridiculous.
So that stuff would bother me, and that's when I always would think, I need to make my own. Well, people beat me to it, because there are now some amazing artists out there making some really, I've been watching all these weathering technique videos and all this stuff where people add rust to foam, you know, to make rusty foam armor and stuff like that. It's just amazing stuff. But it makes me really happy.
Yeah.
I think I sounded bitter, but it makes me really happy that, that people are doing this kind of stuff because it's like the right way. You know, like, it's like now you guys get it. You know, no more reflectors on your shoulder pads like in Thunderdome. It's like,
yes,
it's like now you're actually making the Fury Road version, you know, the weathered look. And so I'm really excited about that. And as a kind of a costume, you know, fan, and cosplay fan, especially, I cannot wait. Like this year, people are already getting cynical about how many war boys there will be at Dragon Con. But I think that I invite it. You know, I am excited about that. I'm excited about seeing all the people dressed as war boys, even though there's going to be 500 of them. But
yeah,
but it'll be cool. I mean, it's like right now you can go to Dragon Con and you can see hundreds of stormtroopers, It bothers a lot of people because you can literally just buy these stormtrooper outfits and for like $800 and then you just go and now you're a stormtrooper. Well, these other costumes, you know, you're building a costume. You're going out to Goodwill and finding pants and weathering them and tearing them up. And, you know, it's this whole process that I think is evolving. And I'm really excited about seeing that. And so I'm excited about seeing the Fury Road costumes, the Fallout 4 costumes. There are people who just do Fallout costumes, and they sell it. Like they make power armor out of foam and they sell it, and that's how they make their living.
Some of that stuff is scary good.
Yeah, it's insane. I should get some of those people on the show sometime.
Yeah, we should. Yeah, I mean, it would be cool. When is this convention, by the way?
Well, which one? Dragon Con?
Yeah, the one that you said it was in there. The one you might go to is in LA.
Oh, Wasteland Weekend is in late September.
Late September. So, and do you know where in LA it is?
Yeah, it's in California City, which is where it's like right in the Mojave Desert.
I'm curious because I'm not too far away. I mean, Las Vegas, I'm only about 6 hours away from Anaheim where I'm at. That's how I was – for those of you who don't know, we were actually on Facebook. We were talking about the fact that I had taken my kids to Legoland and, you know, which is, you know, on a spontaneous weekend. And on the way there, half of what was making them ooh-ah more than Legoland was the fact that, oh, look, there's Nipton Road and, oh, my gosh, there's Helios 1, which is now Helios 2 and 3. But can I just tell you the fear that you have when you see three of them? It's like, wait, we're all in deep trouble. But yeah, seeing all these locations from New Vegas, but, yeah, I mean, and then Barstow is halfway, it's only 3 hours away and it's halfway between LA. And I'm guessing that you're more
actually
this direction.
That might be, let me see. I think it's near Barstow. You should look up California City.
I'm going to look it up right now because
it might not be that far from you.
Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't be hard because especially if there's one thing I've learned lately, it's taking the trip to California because we're one of those where it's like, we don't go now. We're never going to go. So we just up and take these crazy trips. But, okay. And so as long as I know what road, okay. So it's not too far away. Yeah. You're up 58. You're just outside of Barstow. You're up by, you're not too, you're between Barstow and Bakersfield. So you're just off of 58, which is hilarious because you're going to, that's in my mod. That's creepier than I meant for it to be. I'm going to have to throw a joke in there that there's a bunch of people who died during the recreation of something. Let's see. You're probably only about, cause even Anaheim was far further away. And so, yeah, you're probably only about 4 hours away, but I was thinking, you know, you're only really about, 3 hours away from Vegas, and the only reason I mentioned Vegas is because it's just, you know, it's Vegas. Yeah. But I might have to look at Crossing Pass on that one.
Yeah, you should do that. It's I know tickets are still available.
Yeah.
But you have to come in costume though. So you have to get your war boy costume up.
Oh. Yeah,
some
I'll just
white paint.
Yeah, I'll just walk in like normal. Like, where are you supposed to be? I'm like, oh, I'm wearing holographic armor. I'm actually not. This is not what I really look like. And then they'll be like, what?
Oh. Their minds will just blow up.
And then they just get, yeah, then they, yeah, that's true. They'd be like, I'll be like, you can't handle it. I'm from the Big Empty. Yeah, you're going to let me in.
I think one of the big things is they want it to be, not really Mad Max centered, but I think that's kind of the overall, theme is Mad Max, but there are Fallout costumers there. And
well, I could wear a leather jacket and mumble.
Oh, there you go.
And then every once in a while, I'll just be like, I broke you. You know, like, probably wondering why I shot someone before throwing him out of a plane. You know, then they'd be like, oh, hey, you're coming on in, you know?
Yeah.
Mr. De Niro, we've got to get in there, you know?
Probably.
That's good. Oh, that's cool. It's a good time to love to be liking this stuff. I mean, it's great to have it all be coming back like this.
Yeah, definitely.
It's like post apocalyptic.
Yep.
It got more elliptic. It's not really post. It's like pre-elliptic now. So it's not a complete circle. Yeah.
Well, let's go ahead and wrap this one up. We are like an hour and a half almost here.
Yeah. Did we almost lose our minds? See, it's the trailer. Now we're seeing ghosts and we're being hunted by the dead as much as the living too. I see what just happened.
That's how it turns out.
My gosh, this is how it begins.
All right, so let's wrap this up. But I think, you know, we mentioned every show about our Facebook page. It's very important because that's where we interact most with people. You know, we don't really do it on the website because the website's kind of just shows the show notes and everything. But the Facebook, go search for Through the Aftermath and it's right there. And I think I closed it because we were having a lot of spammers, but you can just do a request to join and I'll hook you up right away. So there's Facebook, and then I actually have an Instagram that I started called Post-Apoc Vehicles. And I started getting into Instagram big time. So I started this Post-Apoc Vehicles thing, and in the description I say from one of the hosts of Through the Aftermath, podcast. So it's kind of like an unofficial, Through the Aftermath Instagram, but it kind of centers on vehicles. I don't know.
Yeah.
So if you want to check that out, you know, follow that on Instagram. If you're on the Instagrams, you can look at that.
What? There was one other thing that I was going to look at here. Let's see. It's did you get a request? There was actually, I believe, I don't know if it was one of the listeners, but there was a one of the people was sent us an email saying that they had just launched a post-apocalyptic sitcom on iTunes.
Oh, I didn't see that.
You didn't hear this? Okay, yeah. I've got, this is kind of spontaneous, so forgive me. But yeah, I got the, it was from Alfie Shaw is the name. It says, "Dear Jonathan, hope you're well. My name's Alfie Shaw, and I've just launched a post-apocalyptic sitcom on iTunes called Don't Worry, It's Only the End of the World. It's a cross between Fallout and Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy," which right there, he had me. I was like, well, yeah. I'm on board. Yeah, it's like, yeah, it'd be like Vogon Poetry. I'm already there. And it says the show can be found here. And he gave me a link to it. And he just said, I'm wondering if there's any chance you could just spread the word. And so, you know, me and Sean, we do love the independently created stuff. I mean, you see that from the movies we've gone over on iTunes. So, or not iTunes, but on YouTube. But, maybe we could link that up on our Facebook page or whatever. And I'm going to check it out too. I haven't had a chance to, but, that would be kind of cool to be able to, see what this is all about.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, we need to get back, as soon as major motion pictures and major games stop, having big announcements, we can get back into, reviewing the independent movies.
I thought for sure you were about to go, we can have another email show. I was about to start freaking laughing. I was like, that was the funniest thing you've ever said, but that's not what you said. So. If we could stop having news, we could have a good email show like we used to. And I was like, okay, that was good. That was good. See, we're cracking. I knew
it. Yeah, we are.
We just crossed 130. There it is. Yeah. So that's all, folks. No, I'm just kidding.
All right. So, yeah, follow us. You can email also if you want to send us an email, ttaftermath@gmail.com. Throughtheaftermath.com is the website. And Jonathan's Beyond the Aftermath.
Yep, I'm beyond. I've gone so far beyond the aftermath. It should be called like 3 years later. I still have my hair, but I'm pretty good at 3D Studio Max. But you'll actually, funny enough, you're actually going to see our Through the Aftermath site change just a little bit here pretty quick. So keep your eyes open. Yeah.
Nice. Will it blow up or?
No, it will split a little bit. You will say, oh, spray chrome. I like that. I do like that.
All right. So, I guess that's it from us. And, we got a lot of good stuff coming up here. You know, we got the Fallout stuff coming up. And so keep an eye on Facebook. We'll talk about that on there. If we don't get to, if we don't get to make an episode right away after that, just check us out. We'll have conversations about it on there, I'm sure. But yeah. we'll go ahead and cut this this episode out here because we are our minds. We don't have any left. It's just it's gone.
It's gone.
So so thanks everyone for listening. And this is Sean.
And this is Jonathan saying, stay a Boston out there. Dang it! God.
Did you say Boston out there?
My socks are red.